Evening, everyone. If you'll turn to Luke chapter 17, Luke chapter 17 is where we will begin our study tonight as we talk about the call of duty. Luke 17, the call of duty. Those of you who played a video game, you see what I did there with that picture. But this is actually an uncomfortable subject. I'll just be honest with you. We don't really like to think about this too much. And Jesus states this truism, and it's just, I don't know, it's always hard to hear. Every single time I read it, it's just something about it just grates on me a little bit. And I think I'm not alone in that. And look in Luke 17 with me in verse 7 and read through verse 10. This isn't really a parable. It's really more of a truism. It's just kind of an axiom, something that's very obvious in real life at that time. He says in verse 7, "Which of you having a slave plowing or tending sheep will say to him when he has come in from the field, 'Come immediately and sit down to eat'? But will he not say to him, 'Prepare something for me to eat, and properly clothe yourself, and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you may eat and drink?' He does not thank the slave because he did the things which were commanded, does he? So you too, when you do all the things which are commanded, you say, 'We are unworthy slaves. We have done only that which we ought to have done.'" In the religious world today, you don't hear much about a Christian and a Christian's duty. The word duty is, well, it means obligation. It means that which is expected of us. In practical terms, it means doing things that we don't want to do just because we have to. Those two things aren't really paired much with Christianity. I believe we're actually losing our concept of duty in our country as a whole. I feel sometimes that despite JFK's charge 50 years ago, too many people are asking what their country can do for them rather than what they can do for their country. And of course, that's not just in relation to their country. That's in our relationships as well. Fathers are not fulfilling their duties in many cases to their children, their families, husbands and wives not fulfilling their duties to one another, students not fulfilling their duties in school, employees not fulfilling their duties in the workplace. And most tragic, of course, is that we're losing our concept of duty in Christianity so that Christians, or at least people who call themselves Christians, are not fulfilling their duties to Jesus Christ. Now, on some level, I get it. Duty, you know, it's just not very glorious. It certainly doesn't sound religious. As Christians, you know, we'd rather hear sermons about how wonderful God's love is, and it's just so wonderful that anytime He asks us to do something, we're just going to jump right on it with all smiles and say, "Absolutely, I'm going to do this because I love you, and I always want to do what you say." Well, that's the kind of Christianity that sells books. It's the kind of Christianity that draws crowds. But that's a Christianity that's foreign to the New Testament. It's a Christianity that is shallow and superficial, and I believe is very detrimental because it causes Christians to fall away, they give up on God when things get tough because, well, they've adopted a dutyless Christianity. And as dry as duty sounds, it actually is very powerful, folks. If we can restore the meaning of this word in our lives, it will be a powerful motivator. It will get us through the ups and downs of life so that no matter what happens to us, our relationship will stay stable and secure with the Lord and with others. It's especially powerful, I think, if it can be activated in men. I think men, there's just something about how we're wired that to be called or enlisted into service to meet some pressing obligation, we just love that. You know, so wives, if you want to get your husband to mow the lawn or do that chore, instead of saying, you know, "Hey, this is the third time I've asked, can you please do this?" Just say, "It's your duty, soldier. Get out there and do it." And watch, the game face will come on. He'll go out and do it. Because it's just powerful. He feels needed now. There's this weighty sense of, well, I've got a duty. I've got an obligation here I've got to meet. I've read this funny suggestion for wives with newborns who struggle sometimes to get their husbands to help with the baby. It said, what you do is you name your child Gotham. And that way, if he starts crying in the middle of the night, all you have to do is roll out over your husband and say, "Gotham needs you," and he'll just go immediately and do whatever he needs to do. Aside from the fact, of course, that that's powerful because every man wants to be Batman. The reason we love figures like Batman is because Batman has a sense of duty and obligation to do what's hard simply because it's right. And I'm convinced, folks, we all have this deep down desire to be called to duty. And I use this, I joked about the video game, that's actually the symbol or the I don't know what you would call it, the sign for the video game. It's a huge series, very popular, especially with young men. We love this idea of being needed, of having some important obligation. I think we desperately need to restore this in our minds in Christianity too. And we have a very weighty duty to the Lord. I want to share with you two reasons why duty is so powerful and how I think it will help our spiritual walk with God. First of all, duty overrides fear. There's just no question that in our lives we are put in scary situations all the time. I mean, if you ever sit down and think about the things we have to go through in an average lifespan, the type of situations we're put in just in the average course of growing up and facing life. It's truly daunting. In school, usually where it starts, you have to face a lot of really scary assignments, a lot of really hard things, tests and essays and quizzes, and there's fear that maybe I'm not going to pass, or maybe I'm not going to get the grade that I want to get. Or at work, we're given duties, and they're very demanding, and of course, depending on the importance of our job, it can be very crucial that we don't make mistakes, and there could be some serious fear involved there. In relationships, no matter where we're at work, school, and our own families, we're many times put in a situation where we have to have hard conversations with people about inappropriate behavior, perhaps, and we're afraid of what will happen when we do that. As Christians, we're told to evangelize, to teach people about Jesus. There's a lot of fear that goes along with doing that many times. Husbands, it's your responsibility to lead your wives. Wives, it's your responsibility to submit to your husbands. Is there any fear? And I think there's probably some terror on both sides of that equation. Having children, any fear there, parents? Being an elder, any fear there, elders? It's just amazing how many different positions we find ourselves in life where we have to make scary decisions and we have to have scary conversations and we have to take on scary responsibilities. And if we allow it, fear will rule us. It will either paralyze us or it will cause us to make excuses. And I think probably those two things go together. The excuses take over. I'm not smart enough. I'm not old enough. I'm not young enough. I'm not ready yet. I don't have the right personality. I'm not the right kind of person. I can't do that. Very easy to happen in all situations of fear. But I want you to notice Jeremiah chapter 1. Look in Jeremiah. Jeremiah is a young man. We don't know his exact age. But he is young, possibly even a teenager. I'm not sure, low 20s maybe. And he is called by God to preach to God's people when the nation is just in utter ruin politically and morally because of the corruptness of the people. And listen to what God says to Jeremiah here. He says in verse 5, well, I'll start in verse 4. Now the word of the Lord came to me saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I have appointed you a prophet to the nations. Then I said, alas, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak because I am a youth. But the Lord said to me, do not say, I am a youth, because everywhere I send you, you shall go. And all that I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. Teenagers, let me ask you this question. Of course, it would extend to adults eventually, but teenagers, what if God said to you, I'm tired and I'm angry about America and how we are supporting abortion and fornication and gay marriage, and I want you to go on live television and tell the whole country of America on live TV that if they do not repent, God will destroy them. I want you to do that. How are you going to feel about that? Are you going to say, absolutely, give me the White House on the phone. I need a press conference immediately. No. That's a terrifying thought. And again, I say, I ask the young people that. I think all of us would not be too excited about that kind of mission. That's a very difficult thing, not only because public speaking is one of the top fears of all people, but because the kind of speaking that's involved is condemnatory in nature. It's negative. It's going to make people hate you. It's going to maybe invoke death threats from people. They're not going to like you. They may even try to kill you. That's just terrifying, folks. Yet this is exactly what Jeremiah is being asked to do by God. Exactly. Is it any wonder the excuses came out? Oh, I'm too young. I don't know how to speak well enough. Moses did something similar, right? I'm pretty sure if he were 40 years old, he would still say, I'm too young. If he were 80 years old, he would have said, I'm too old. If he were 60, right in the middle, he'd say, I'm too busy. Okay, but the point is, he did not want to do this because he was afraid. But God says, it is your duty, Jeremiah. It is your obligation. And God promised him if he would do this, despite his fear, he would deliver him. He said it in verse 8, I'm with you to deliver you. Notice the very last verse in the chapter, in verse 19, God tells him specifically, he says, they will fight against you, but they will not overcome you, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. They will fight against you. This is going to be difficult for you, Jeremiah. Think about courage for a moment. It's been said that courage is not the absence of fear, but the judgment that there's something more important than fear. Duty breeds courage because we know that fulfilling our obligations is more important than any fear we have, particularly fulfilling our obligations to the Lord. Listen to what else God tells Jeremiah two verses before. In verse 17, God tells Jeremiah, now gird up your loins and arise and speak to them all which I command you. Do not be dismayed before them, or I will dismay you before them. Folks, this isn't warm and fuzzy at all. It's not something up for debate. This is God saying, Jeremiah, you will do this. You must do this. This is your job, and if you don't do it, I will punish you. That is what produced courage in Jeremiah to go through with it, because he knew his duty to God was more important than fear. Or stated another way, his fear of God was greater than his fear of the task God asked him to do. Jesus said the same thing to his apostles when he sent them out. They didn't really want to go. And he says, but don't fear those who can kill the body. Fear him who can destroy both soul and the body in hell. He gave the apostles there a sense of duty, a sense of obligation. And maybe I just spoiled that a little bit, because someone could say, well, hey, Brian, you know, this is all Old Testament stuff. You know, we're under the New Testament now. You don't see that kind of duty. Well, first of all, Luke 17, pretty clear. It's our duty to serve God because He is our master. But we'll talk more about that in a bit. Think about a couple more other passages. I already mentioned an example of Jesus, but look in 2 Timothy 2. 2 Timothy 2, the language that Paul uses, it's just real clear. When you read through 1 and 2 Timothy, that Timothy struggled with, maybe this is a good mnemonic device, Timothy struggled with timidity. He was timid. He was a little afraid sometimes, and Paul had to encourage him to be strong. Well, notice what he says in 2 Timothy 2, verses 1 through 4. You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. The things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. Suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No soldier in active service entangles himself in the affairs of everyday life so that he may please the one who enlisted him as a soldier. So it makes sense that Timothy would be timid. He's a young man entrusted with the greatest responsibility in the world, which is to preach the gospel of God, of Jesus Christ. But notice Paul encourages him to be strong using language of duty that a soldier who is enlisted would have. That means despite his fear, he needs to be strong. He needs to be willing to suffer hardship. Now, I understand we may not all be preachers, but are we not all soldiers for Christ in spiritual warfare, charged, enlisted by God to keep it all together and to keep from getting entangled and distracted with the sins of this life, to keep focused on our mission? Absolutely. Look at another verse. This one is a little of an indirect approach, I guess. But look in Romans 13, verses 7 and 8. In Romans 13, he's talking about being subject to the governing authorities. And listen to what he says in verses 7 and 8. He says, "Render to all what is due them. Tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another. For he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law." And what's interesting is the very idea of duty, the word actually comes from the idea of that which is due somebody. It's what we owe people. And Paul says we actually have a duty to all men, even to the government here in this passage. And he even says one of our obligations or duties is to love one another. That sounds strange, especially in our country, that love is a duty. That doesn't sound like love at all, because we think that if it's love, you have to want to show it, or it's invalid. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I hope you see it's clear. We must have a sense of duty in this life as Christians, and that's not a bad thing, because duty really helps to override fear. Are you afraid that you're not going to do well in school? Okay. You still have a duty to work hard and do your best anyway. Parents, are you afraid of raising children, afraid to discipline them, afraid of all the sacrifices it'll mean in your life? Okay, but it's still your duty to raise them in the discipline and the admonition of the Lord, because serving God is more important than your fear. Husbands, are you afraid to be the spiritual leaders in your home? Well, too bad. It's your duty, soldier. Wives, are you afraid to let your husbands lead because you want the control? Well, too bad. It's your duty to submit. Are we afraid to talk to our friends about Jesus? Suck it up. That's too bad. It's our duty to talk to people about the salvation of Jesus Christ. Are we terrified to talk to a brother or sister who's living in sin and we're just afraid of how that's going to go? Okay, we can be afraid. It's not wrong to be afraid. But our duty to snatch our brethren out of the fires of hell will give us the courage to talk to them anyway. I know that this is hard to hear. It's not a warm and fuzzy kind of sermon at all. But the reason duty is so powerful to override fear is because it makes our decision to serve the Lord not so much of a choice anymore. It takes the debate out of our service. When we have a sense of duty, we stop debating so much about whether or not we're going to do the right thing in this situation. Now, we may debate about, you know, what's the best way to go about doing it, but when given choice to do right or to do wrong, not going to be a debate because we know what our duty is. Think about soldiers in real life combat. Maybe they've won medals or awards for doing heroic things in battle. I know you've read articles on this or seen interviews. When those soldiers are interviewed, you just stand in awe at their courage, first of all, for running straight into a firefight, even though they could have gotten away and they could have run away, but they went in to rescue their fellow soldiers, even though it meant death. We're blown away by that courage, but when they talk about it, they downplay it. They downplay it because to them, they were just doing their job. They didn't really have a choice in their mind to go rescue their fellow soldier or not, because to them, it was their duty to never leave a man behind. Now, of course, they did have a choice. They could have just run away, and we're thinking, I might have just run away. But to them, because of their sense of duty, it really wasn't up for debate. They didn't have to stop and think about their fear. They didn't have time. They just acted. And the same thing is true for us as Christians, that our duty ought to become so ingrained in us that we don't have time to think about fear. We're just going to do what needs to be done and trust that God will take care of us. That sense of duty will take a lot of the hesitation and indecisiveness out of our Christianity. We'll accomplish a lot more for the Lord because we won't be agonizing so much over our choices. When we see that doing the right thing might lead to some fearful consequences, we're not going to let those things stop us, because in our sense of duty, we've already made the choice before that choice was even presented to us. We already determined long ago, I'm going to do the right thing no matter how scary it is, because the call of duty as a Christian is to serve our Master, and that duty overrides our fear. And secondly, this evening, duty overrides feelings. In our country, I don't think that we have a big problem with duty at work. Honestly, I think Americans understand when we're working, we have duties to perform. We have these tasks that you give us. Soldiers have duties to perform on the battlefield. Preachers have duties to put sermons together. for the most part, we grasp obligation, okay, in the workplace. Where we really struggle is with the concept of duty in relationships. When it comes to relationships between boyfriends and girlfriends, husbands and wives, parents and children, between friends, and of course, between Christians and God, we're very feeling driven because we define love as a feeling. We judge the strength of our relationships based on the strength of our feeling toward the other person. We think, well, this is a strong marriage is where two people have these super strong feelings for each other and they're just infatuated with each other all the time. And we think the same thing is true about our Christianity, that strong Christians, they're just infatuated with God at all times and they always love doing what He says all the time. And this is just a disaster. This is why marriages fall apart, because people start to lose some of those intense feelings, and maybe the wife or the husband worries, well, maybe I don't love him or her anymore. Maybe I married the wrong person. Husbands have that same problem. And so what we do is we look for ways to regain those feelings of love. That's the key that our society says, you want a stronger marriage, well, you need to rekindle all the feelings of love, and that will make a strong marriage. Well, of course, our society also equates love with sex, and so the way to rekindle those feelings is to do the 20 creative things that the grocery store magazines tell you to do, to spice up the bedroom. But that's just so shallow. There's no sense of duty in that. It's all about feelings, and sadly, mainstream Christianity has largely become about feelings as well. And sometimes we take our cues from the world's brand of Christianity instead of from the Bible. So maybe a person becomes a Christian and they come up out of the waters of baptism just what we would say on fire for the Lord. And they just are thrilled and overwhelmed with His grace and His love for them. But then a few months pass by and that feeling starts to wear off. And they wonder, well, maybe I'm not a real Christian. maybe I just don't love God the way I thought I did, because I don't always feel like doing what He asked me to do. Look back in Jeremiah. Jeremiah 20 this time. Jeremiah 20. Jeremiah 20. Read verses 7 and 8 with me. Jeremiah 20, verses 7 and 8. He's still wrestling with the difficulty of the task that God has given him. And he says in verses 7 and 8, O Lord, You have deceived me, and I was deceived. You have overcome me and prevailed. I have become a laughingstock all day long. Everyone mocks me. For each time I speak, I cry aloud. I proclaim violence and destruction, because for me the word of the Lord has resulted in reproach and derision all day long. Now stop there for just a second. Again, does that sound like Jeremiah felt like preaching this negative message of condemnation to all these people? No, of course not. It's the last thing in the world he wanted to do. But he didn't base his obedience on his feelings. He didn't say, well, I'm not really feeling good about this, so I'm just going to not do it because I must not love God like I say I do. No, he obeyed anyway because his sense of duty overrode his feelings of dislike for the task. Look at verse 9 here. But if I say, I will not remember him or speak any more in his name, then in my heart it becomes like a burning fire shut up in my bones, and I am weary of holding it in, and I cannot endure it. Now here someone will say, aha, see, Jeremiah did have strong feelings to preach the word. I'll say, yeah, you're absolutely right. But do you see that the feelings in verse 9 come from a sense of duty and obligation? These are not feelings of joy or happiness or delight or what we would call love. It's a feeling, the burning that he has is a feeling of that comes from must, need, have to, can't not, because it was his duty to say what he needed to say. Someone may still say, though, I don't know, Brian, you know, that fire in the heart, that sure makes an awesome sermon. And I tell you, if I had the fire in my heart like Jeremiah did, that kind of religious feeling and zeal I'm looking for, well, Christianity would be a whole lot easier because I would just love to do what God says all the time. That's not what verse 9 means. I can prove it to you. You want to know how Jeremiah was really feeling, as we would say, about how much he wants to be doing what he's doing? Drop down a little bit further in the chapter. Look in verse 14. Jeremiah says, cursed be the day when I was born. and let the day not be blessed when my mother bore me. Cursed be the man who brought the news to my father, saying, a baby boy has been born to you, and made him very happy. But let that man be like the cities which the Lord overthrew without relenting, and let him hear an outcry in the morning and a shout of alarm at noon, because he did not kill me before birth, so that my mother would have been my grave and her womb ever pregnant. Why did I ever come forth from the womb to look on trouble and sorrow, so that my days have been spent in shame? Just an interesting verse for abortion there. Jeremiah has a self-concept before he's leaves the womb. Maybe a sermon for another time. But how's that for lovey-dovey, folks? It's not very lovey-dovey at all. Jeremiah's like, oh, I'm just so enamored by God. I just love so much preaching his word to these people. I can't get enough of it. No. What we need is Jeremiah's feeling in verse 9 that came from a burning sense of duty, so that when we don't feel like serving God and doing hard things we don't want to do, we'll do it anyway. We'll do it anyway. How about back to the New Testament for a moment? Look in Luke 17 again. In Luke 17 where we started. And here's a question to ponder. Do you think that slave, after working in the field all day long for his master, would really feel like coming in at the end of the day and making dinner now for his master? Having to stand up even longer? I don't think so. Even if the master was the nicest master in the world and treated him right, the slave would still rather sit down and take a rest after a long day of working. Not because he's a bad person, not because he hates his master, but because he's human and he's tired and he's been working all day. The point is, though, he's still going to go in and he's going to make dinner for his master. Not because it feels good and he's just elated to make his master dinner, but because it's his duty to do it. Now, I emphasize this all the time, our need to look at the surrounding context and ask why the gospel writer put this verse where he did. Look earlier in Luke 17. Think about it in these terms. Look in verses 1 through 4. Jesus said to his disciples, it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to him through whom they come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea, than that he would cause one of these little ones to stumble. Be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him, and if he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you 7 times a day and returns to you 7 times saying, I repent, forgive him. If someone sinned against us 7 times in one day, would we feel like forgiving that person? If a person went out and keyed your car and then they said, you know, I apologize, I'm so sorry, please forgive me. And you said, okay, I forgive you. And then they went and they keyed your car again. And then they apologized, and you said, okay, well, you know, I forgive you. And then they went and keyed your car again. And it just repeated 7 times in one day. Would you feel like forgiving that person? No, you'd feel like punching them in the face. But you wouldn't, because it's your duty to forgive them, despite your feeling. And notice the apostles, they're just blown away by this. They can't believe it. They ask for more faith. They say, increase our faith. But notice the Lord said, if you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Jesus is saying, you don't really need much faith to do this. All you need is a small amount of faith. And then he tells them this story because he's showing them what you really need is a sense of duty. How many times we forgive somebody, it's not really a question of the level of our faith. You can believe strongly that God exists and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him, and you can just have that firmly held faith and belief. Doesn't mean you're always going to feel like doing what God asks you to do, especially if it means forgiving somebody who has wronged us 7 times in one day. I've never had that happen to me. I hope it never does. I think God has it happen to him all the time with us. But he still forgives. And that comes from a sense of duty. How about this verse in 1 Corinthians 7:3? The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. And that's talking about the sexual relationship in context. This is probably the most unromantic verse in the Bible. You wouldn't see this in any Disney movies, that's for sure. Wouldn't see Aladdin, you know, asking Jasmine, come away with me and I will fulfill my duties to you. We just don't like that in our culture. It just rubs us the wrong way. Yet this is exactly what's been lost in marriages. It's why marriages fail. It's exactly what's been lost in Christianity and why so many Christians fall apart. Because we think relationships are all about feelings, and if we don't have strong feelings of desire to do something for God or for our spouse, well, we think there's something wrong. That's just not true, folks. Feelings fluctuate. They change with the weather. They change daily. They change weekly. They're up and down. They change based on how much sleep we get. They change just from listening to a song or from watching a particular movie. But there needs to be a baseline that our feelings revolve around. That baseline is duty. This is cool. This is kind of a cool, fancy version that fits the color scheme on my PowerPoint of what a sound wave looks like. The high points are called crests, and the low points are called troughs. But right in the center is the line called the equilibrium. This is the rest position. So if you have a guitar string and it's just sitting there and nobody plucks it, it's not making any noise. It's sitting at rest. It's in equilibrium. Think of our lives in the same way. The ups and downs, the crests and troughs represent our feelings. They fluctuate all the time. They are up and down. Yet the equilibrium is our sense of duty, our sense of commitment and obligation. It's our sense of duty as Christians that helps keep us stable. People who allow their feelings to control them never feel stable. They're constantly debating, do I really love God? Do I really love my wife? Do I really love my husband? Should I quit my job? Am I really fit to be a parent? I'm not sure if I should be in school anymore. And it's just all over the place. There is never any sense of peace. Because if they have negative feelings about something, it just throws them for a loop. We're going to have negative feelings about a lot of things in life because God is going to ask us to do things that we just don't like. We just don't want to do. But duty overrides those feelings and keeps us on track for the Lord. God asks you husbands to love your wives, cherish her, even if maybe you're annoyed with her at the moment. And wives, the same thing. You're asked to respect, to honor your husbands, even if he's made you mad and you just don't really feel like respecting him and submitting to him. God says that's your duty. And I know you may be thinking, well, Brian, you're not married. That's easy for you to say. I get it. But I'm not saying it. God's saying that in his word. God's saying it in his word. Some days you'll feel like it. Others you won't. The point is, it doesn't matter how you feel about it. It's your duty. We may not feel like doing what our boss says at work because he's just not a nice person. God says do it anyway. Children, you may not like what your parents tell you to do. There weren't a lot of things I liked that my dad told me to do. But you know, you do it anyway because it's your duty. It didn't work for me. You know, my dad asked me to do a chore, take out the trash. It didn't work to say, you know, Dad, I would, but I just don't feel like it. Well, he never told me. He never said, well, since you don't feel like it, then don't do it, because I really want you to feel like it. That way I know that you love me. No, he just said, you do it. I don't care what you feel. And good parents, that's exactly what you say. I'm sympathetic. I care about your feelings. I want to take those into account. But as a parent, you're teaching your child to have a sense of duty, to do them anyway, just because you have to, just because it's the right thing to do and because I said so as the authority figure. Because ultimately you're preparing them for God to do that. If we stay up late Saturday night, chances are we may not feel like getting up and coming to worship in the morning on Sunday. If we're really busy with something in the afternoon on Sunday, we may not feel like driving all the way back to the church building at 6 p.m. Sunday night. Sometimes we're not going to feel like going to work. We're going to feel like doing nothing. Parents aren't going to feel like disciplining their children. Some days we're not going to feel like reading our Bibles. We're not going to feel like praying. We're not going to feel like giving up our time and energy and money for the benefit of others. We talked this morning about repenting. You better believe there are going to be some sins we are not going to feel like repenting of because they give us some sense of comfort, some sense of benefit or temporary pleasure. And I know this kind of teaching, well, this just sounds like heresy in our religious world today. Because the thinking is, if I don't feel like doing what God says, my heart's not right and I'm not a good Christian and I need to repent. Well, that's just nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. The fact that we obey God and do what he says, even in the times that we don't feel like it, shows that our heart is right. And that's the true display of love. Our society defines love, makes love a noun. In Christianity, love is a verb. showing God love by doing actively what He says, despite our feelings. I've said this many times. I guarantee you, Jesus did not feel like going to the cross. Yet the Hebrew writer says He learned obedience through the things which He suffered. We're looking one last passage this evening in 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians 9. We talked this morning about Paul. Paul didn't really volunteer to be an apostle. Paul didn't come running up to Jesus and say, "Oh man, now that I know You're the Lord, let me go out and tell everybody about You, and especially the Gentiles, because I really want people to chase me from city to city, stoning me to death and beating me, and I want to get in shipwrecks and all that stuff." No, Paul did not sign up to be an apostle. Jesus signed him up. Jesus put a yoke on him, and He said, as we talked this morning, Jesus said, if you disobey Me, things are not going to go well for you. You will bear this yoke. You will do this work as an apostle. And Paul freely admits, he says in chapter 9 of 1 Corinthians, verse 16, if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for I am under compulsion. For woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. If I do this voluntarily, I have a reward. But if against my will, I have a stewardship entrusted me. Paul views this as a stewardship. It's something that Jesus has entrusted him with. He's under compulsion here. Now, again, we read that and think, well, does that mean Paul doesn't love the Lord? Well, that's obviously not true. You just read his letters. He had a great love and appreciation for the Lord. But it did mean he was willing to put his sense of duty as a steward entrusted with this apostleship above his feelings. And I'll say this final thing tonight. It's true, folks, that our service should not be based only on duty. If our service to the Lord is only based on duty, and there are just no feelings at all in our Christianity, it's going to be a shallow Christianity. It's not going to work. But our culture has only feelings and no duty. See, we want that. You don't want to swing to one side of the spectrum either way. You need both. You need both of those. If we see that God has sent His Son to die for us, I mean, that should break our hearts. That should make us want to serve God and want to do the things that He asks. But the truth is, our feelings fluctuate just like they do in all relationships. And there are going to be some times where God asks us to do things we just don't feel like doing. And what the world does when those things happen is the world gives up. People get divorced because, well, I don't feel it anymore. Christians stop coming to church because, well, I was coming to church and I just wasn't feeling it anymore. And they may even give up on God completely because, well, I don't have that emotional high that I really am looking for with God. But here's the amazing thing. When we aren't feeling particularly positive about doing things for the Lord, do them anyway. Because when you do them anyway, the feelings will come. The feelings will return. You don't quit. You do them anyway. Same principle works in all relationships. Husbands, you're not feeling the love for your wife. Well, you better start serving her more, doing more duties for her, and that feeling will come. Wives, the same way. Friendships, parent-child relationships, every relationship, but especially tonight, the most important, our relationship with God. When we do our duty as Christians, those feelings will follow. And when the feelings fail, duty will prevail. Can we take out your songbooks, please? The Bible teaches that God has called us all into fellowship with His Son, which means we have salvation. We can be adopted into His family, but it also means there's going to be some duty, some responsibility, some expectations about that. And God is calling each and every one of us to be a Christian tonight. And I don't know how you feel about that. Maybe your feelings are mixed tonight. If you want to talk to me about your feelings, that's fine. I'll sit down and I'll listen to you. But at the end of the day, it's still going to be the same thing that God says, and that is, obey Me anyway. Come to Me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. If we can help you in any way to fulfill your duties better as a Christian or to become a Christian, come forward and let us know. Always stand and sing.